League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
No Paul Gallant today, Houston. Be excited. Know that the Lord is looking over you. Paul Gallant is out somewhere nude sunbathing before training camp gets underway this week for the Texans. I'm Will Kunkel. You can find me on all social media platforms, X, TikTok, Instagram, my show Kicking It with Kunkel. I've had Jabba Chamberlain on, had Clint Hurdle on. I do a whole bunch of individual breakdowns as well. Going to have Cecil Shorts on Wednesday following day one of training camp as the Texans. Finally, football's back. I feel like we do this every year, though. We have like nine, speaking of Laramie Tunsil like we did in the last break, we have like nine false starts when it comes to football. All right, football's finally back. It's OTAs. Eh, not really. Football's back. It's minicamp. Football's back. It's training camp. That one feels a little bit more real, but then it's like, all right, we're going to do this for 5-6 weeks. It's not really back. And then football's back. It's finally a game. It's the preseason, so it's not really back. And then finally football actually gets back in the regular season, Mapes.
Jeez. Yeah, the Hall of Fame game is the most not back, but yeah. Everyone's like, football.
Wow, finally we can watch football. And then You're a quarter in, you're like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, even the Bears were in it, and you're like, Caleb Williams. Like, he's a rookie quarterback. You want to get him all the reps you can. And it's like, actually, he won't dress for the Hall of Fame game because even the teams in it are like,
Nobody does.
We don't need a fourth preseason game.
Four preseason games, an extra week of training camp. Like, last year's season was so long, it dragged out forever.
Yeah.
And they had that late ass bye week. It sucked.
Yeah. I think this year they kind of have an early bye week.
They
sucks kinda, in a different way.
I don't know what the perfect bye week is necessarily.
Like nine.
Yeah. You're probably like right in the middle, right? Yeah. But you just want to, whatever it takes to get help. It probably changes for every team every year depending on what your injury situation is. Like, you want it when you're the most banged up and you need to get healthy. Tough stretch upcoming. Playoffs down the road, whenever that is, and you can't dictate that, obviously.
Yeah, it needs to be like an Uno card that you can slap down.
Like, oh, now I want my bye
Uno
week.
Uno reverse. We're not playing this week.
I think the Astros would take a bye week right about now.
I mean, they just had one, more or less. They just more. Yeah, I remember
in Seattle
before the break, I remember thinking, oh, All-Star break came at the perfect time for the Astros.
Perfect time, and then coming out, you're
games
like,
out of it. Shoot. All right, maybe not.
All right, so this is what I want. I teased this before the break, and I'm going to get in on this and. I actually did some research with some sources that I have that know C.J. Stroud from college and played or were around him when he played, and they pretty much confirmed what I think, is that C.J. Stroud this season, this is another reason that I really do think that the Texans got better with the trade of Laramie Tunsil because he wasn't the right leader for that room. He didn't set a high standard. He wasn't there all the time in training camp and off-season workouts. He wasn't always around, and it was always like, well, he's a veteran. It's okay. It's fine. Just show up. Do your job. I'm good. The problem is when you take that mentality and you set the tone for a room and you set the tone for the offense, like that doesn't that's not good enough. The tone and the standard needs to be set. You need to be an alpha dog, and you need to hold people to that standard as well. Now, you see that on the defensive side of the ball. There's a standard that defense has. DeMeco sets that standard. If you don't hold up to that standard, you will not play. He will bench you. He did that to Jalen Petrie last year. And kudos to Jalen. He came back from that and became a very impactful player down the stretch for the Texans. Will Anderson upholds that standard. Azeez Al-Shaair holds that standard. There's a standard and there's a culture on the defensive side of the ball that if you don't do it, you know damn well you're going to get an earful from somebody telling you this is the way we do things and this is the way you're expected to play. And if you don't, you will not play. Make no mistake about it. And as much as DeMeco does lead the defense, it is player-led, it is player-driven, and it is player-upheld as well. Now, offensively, like, who does that? Where is that leadership offensively? I think, so far from what we've seen, the biggest alpha leader that holds that standard and has expectations is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is the dude that knows what needs to get done. He did it in Cincinnati to get to a Super Bowl, and he knows what it takes to play real alpha male football, which is what the Texans want to do. They want to be that team. And Joe Mixon knows what it takes. I will take one exception to that, and I've called him out before on this, and I think he probably would understand that he, I believe it was the Ravens game on Christmas Day when they got embarrassed. And after the game, he was gone. He didn't talk to the media. If I hold Laramie Tunsil to that accountability, he never spoke to the media. Joe needed to talk to the media that day. He needed to answer questions, so other guys had to. It's not for us. It's, yes, we want him. Yes, we think he should because it's good for us. But it, in a team locker room, you do it so your other dudes don't have to take those questions. We all want to talk to Joe. Why? Because he's the best player on that offense, for argument's sake. So if it's not him, it's Nico. Who, Nico, by the way, every week when he was healthy, stood up there and he, at his locker, answered questions. That's what a leader does. CJ is mandated by the league to do it at the podium every week. He does it. He does it well. He gives a decent amount of hindsight. He takes the responsibility. Like, he's good at it. Laramie never did it. Now, Joe skipped out at the Ravens game. I thought that was inexcusable. You can't do that. You can't have an off week in that moment. You need to sit down, gather your thoughts, and talk. That's what you have to do at the NFL level. Again, it's not for us. It's not for the media. It's for his teammates. So they don't have to answer the questions. Xavier Hutchinson isn't sitting there being like, so what happened to the run game? Like, why couldn't you get it going? Like, that's not Xavier Hutchinson's job. That's not his role. He can't speak for the offense. John Metchie, he can't do that either. The offensive line has to come down to Laramie Tunsil. So this is what I need from C.J. Stroud this year. I need him to be the Will Anderson, the Azeez Al-Shaair, the DeMeco Ryans. I need C.J. Stroud to be a leader of men. Not a nice guy, not an awesome dude, not the guy that you really want your daughter to date, not the guy that does awesome community service and is a great human being, a phenomenal Christian, and worships and has the Make-A-Wish kid in and says prayers with his family in the end zone inside the bubble. All that is great, and all that honestly is obviously more important as a human being in the course of life. Yes, no doubt. But when it comes to C.J. Stroud, the football player, when it comes to this offense sucking less, and getting over that hump and being allowed to say, hey, we're part of the Texans too, where it's not just the defense. C.J. Stroud needs to have that standard with the offense, in particular the offensive line, and he needs to hold them to that standard. And he needs to say, hey, we're doing off-season workouts here. Everybody shows up. Everybody shows up on this day for mini camps, OTAs, training camp. Not like Laramie Tunsil. Laramie Tunsil was the veteran voice for the Texans for years. He was the highest paid player for years. He was their best player for years. But the standard was, who gives a damn? I'll show up when we're good. I'll show up when I'm ready. That's why I was so critical of Aaron Rodgers not showing up to training camp for the Jets. Bro, you're a new quarterback in a new franchise that historically is embarrassing, and you're trying to create relationships and timing with your wide receivers. And for people that don't understand how critical it is, this is what you're building during training camp is like it's a bond and a frustration that you're going through together. When you go through tough times together, you build a relationship. You get to know each other a little bit more, and you fight harder for that guy next to you. You know what's building for the Jets when Aaron Rodgers wasn't there at training camp? Resentment. I promise you, resentment's building. Oh my God, like, we're out here. They don't do 2-a-days anymore, but we're blocking our ass off. We're working our tail off. We're sweating. We're going through rehab. We're training. We're doing what we need to do. Where's our quarterback? Where the hell is Aaron? What's he doing right now? What's more important than being here with his team that he gets paid multi-millions of dollars for? Like, what is more important than us? Why is it that resentment is building in those moments? And resentment, I guarantee you, builds when Laramie Tunsil isn't out there. And if that's not what's happening, the offensive line isn't getting better when your best offensive lineman isn't out there practicing. So I need C.J. Stroud to be the dude that grabs. I never saw this last year, which is crazy. If C.J. Stroud was this guy, it would spill over on the field. Even if he had hyper-awareness of never, ever embarrassing his offensive lineman, it would still spill over at least once. At least once in a 52-sacked season, he would grab an offensive lineman and tell Laremy Tunsil, sit your ass down right now and stop jumping off sides. Stop. False starting. Block the guy in front of you. That would happen at least once. He would run down the offensive line like you saw Tom Brady do several times through his career. And I'm not saying you have to be Tom Brady. You don't have to be that vocal and that intense with your offensive line. But you do it definitely at some point. Be like, hey, boys, do you mind like getting me off my back and not having me die today? I still would like to go home and see my mother, my family, my friends. I still got a life out of here. I'd like to live to see another year of my life. He almost died last year, for gosh sakes, because the damn offensive line was so bad. Once you would think that that intensity and that leadership and that standard would spill over on the sidelines after one sack of 52 of them. And it never happened. And that's what I need to see from C.J. Stroud this year. I need him to be the Will Anderson, D'Amico Ryans, Azeez Al-Shaair type player that has a standard, knows what the standard is, and sets it and holds it there. And to carry this over to baseball, that's what culture is built on. That's what a successful organization is built on. I talked to Joe Espada about this too. I was talking to him. It was on camera, so it's on Kicking It with Kunkel as well on YouTube. You can go search my show. I just asked him, like, how is it possible? Because Joe and I talk very honestly. Is like, this roster is not very good. Your stars are out. Not even your stars. Your B-level players, your A-level players, all of them are all out. So how is it that you're winning? And let me know if this is what is correct. This is how I see it. You know how to catch the ball. You know how to field the ball, throw the ball. You run the base as well. You don't screw up the little stuff night in and night out. You have a standard that is set. You hold that standard. Players also hold that standard. Like Alex Bregman held it. Carlos Correa held it. Jeremy Pena, now, that's his responsibility. Martin Maldonado had a standard. It was player-driven, and that was kept. When Joe Espada didn't lose his cool last year when things were going bad, he earned his stripes. He earned that honor with this team because you got to go through it, no matter if you're the manager or not. You got to go through something to know that the players trust you, and Joe knows that these players trust him now. He's got their back at all times. He also says, hey, like we got to do the simple things well all the time. The Yankees, for instance, I was watching them this weekend against the Braves. I was in Charlotte seeing family. That team is so embarrassing to watch from a baseball perspective. Like the dude that got thrown out by Ronald Acuña at third base, it should never have happened, ever. Run your ass off the third base and slide. That's all. It's an unbelievable throw, of course, but you should be impossible to be thrown out. I would not get thrown out. And it's not like a brag or anything like that. Like a normal human being, an average athlete, doesn't get thrown out from second to third because if you're running. He just wasn't running. So to not have that standard and for Aaron Boone to allow that to happen consistently. We saw that in the World Series. I've mentioned here before when they played the Dodgers, the Yankees were embarrassed, not because they were like a lesser team, but because they couldn't do the simple things and the fundamentals of the game well. They ran into outs constantly. They dropped balls. They overthrew the ball like constantly. Aaron Judge is like kind of aside. It's like kind of a faux pas for him, but it was part of the overall story. The Texans offense have to do the simple things well constantly to get to the playoffs and then win in the playoffs. That's why the Chiefs win all those close games. When it matters most, they are so buttoned up. They're not going on second and 35. They're not on first and 25 or first and 15 after a false start because they don't make those mistakes. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, whoever else on that team holds people accountable. That's what C.J. Stroud needs to be. Mapes, your thoughts after that nice rant? Now I'm exhausted.
Yeah, get some water, catch your breath. I agree. I think that one of the biggest issues for him is that he was still kind of, despite being the starting quarterback, number two overall pick, when it comes to him and Laremy Tunsil, like he's the junior member of the team. Laremy Tunsil is a guy who's an all-pro. He's been on all those lists. He's had several well-negotiated contracts. Shout out to you, Laremy Tunsil. It is hard for him to pulled the Tom Brady, like you said, and, you know, getting specifically that guy's face, because Tom Brady, whenever he got in anyone's face, kind of checked the resume. His resume is better than anyone. So I think that there's some level of you needed, or the Texans needed, to create that opening for him to take that next step in a leadership role. In a perfect world, your all-pro left tackle would also be a great leader. He would be the guy who can be one of your pillars of the team. Laremy Tunsil, this is not like breaking news. Like, this isn't something we need to talk around. It's very, very clear that he's not that guy. He's a great player, but he is not a Hall of Fame teammate. He's not a Hall of Fame leadership guy.
Yeah, and for CJ to come in as a rookie to kind of take, if it's not overly natural for him.
Yeah, it's hard to ask him to, like, pull that card.
Because you're showing up Laremy Tunsil.
Exactly,
like, exactly. You're taking over a situation where it is Laremy Tunsil's team. Not for better or worse, but for worse. That's not who you want leading your team.
Yeah, I mean, they had the number. They earned that number two pick that they used to pick C.J. Stroud with. That
because the standards didn't matter then. Like, exactly. It just wasn't. It was what it was. Whatever for Laremy. He was in the league for 7 years. He got paid. He was doing his job. Didn't matter. Yeah. This Texans team has a different standard and expectations. It's not to just show up. It's not to just do your job. Who gives a damn? We'll get, you know, 5-6 wins. Who cares? Like, you're good. Like, your kids are good. And that was what Laramie's concern was.
Keep my PFF rating high.
Exactly.
Get to my next contract.
You're
trying to win Super Bowls now.
Yeah, when you're trying to win Super Bowls, when you're trying to win a Super Bowl, when you're trying to win the second round of the playoffs, the divisional round, when you're trying to accomplish something, that's a team goal. It's not an individual goal.
Yep.
So when you have team goals, you have to sacrifice, or at least presume to, like, what's perceived to be sacrificial. It's not sacrificial to show up in training camp, or at least it shouldn't be, if you're in a team sport. So I alluded to this earlier, and I asked someone that's at Ohio State that knows the program extremely well and is involved there, and I said to him, what was the take on CJ as a leader on the field at Ohio State? Like, I know he's a great dude. He leads in pressers. He takes accountability. But what about on the field when it comes to calling guys out and holding a standard? Because he never did that, as I mentioned here on the show just a second ago, saying he never did that on the field. And it just seemed like that's insane for a dude that got sacked 52 times. He said, yeah, he was seen as very quiet, like a good dude, but not a vocal dog at all. Some people thought he was a something blank in that regard. And I said, it's interesting because that's got to change in the NFL. And he said it has to change for him. And that was his main concern of C.J. Stroud coming out of Ohio State, was his ability to lead men. And I think that he leads these men as a human being, like how to be a great Christian, how to help the community, how to be a great person. Like, I think C.J.'s nailed that. He comes from a good family. His mother's phenomenal as well. He does the camps. He does it all. But how does he lead the men on the field when you're in the proverbial trenches, when you're in the proverbial war? How do you react and lead your men then? How do you hold them accountable for failures in the moment that you have to fix next drive? Not next week, not after the half, next drive or next play in the huddle. How do you read and react in those situations, Mapes? That's what I need to see most from C.J. Stroud in training camp, because it's so hard to see anything really in training camp. It's really not overly physical. Like, I've seen 1,000 different MVPs throughout training camp that did donkey nothing in the season at all levels of all teams. Like, that's just kind of the way it works. But what you can see is how C.J. Stroud will lead this group, and I'm very interested to see if he's different verbally and the way he carries himself with them.
Yeah, and he's done all the – or he has all the tools that you would think, all the intangible stuff. Like, you listed, he seems like an awesome guy. There's no complaints whatsoever there. It's just, can he – and I think part of it's just maturing as a quarterback and as a person, of just being more assertive and of just – basically, being more assertive at work. That's what I need C.J. Stroud to do, is to walk into more of a leadership role. I think he can do it. I think, again, he has the tools to do it. He just needs to actually do it. Because you look at other great quarterbacks, all-time great quarterbacks, that C.J. Stroud should be striving to be like. Tom Brady, we've talked about him. Leader on the field in spades. Peyton Manning. The identity of every team that he had been on in the NFL. Drew Brees, like, led the with the little huddle, the breakdown. He would do that every game for the Saints. Like, all these guys, all these, like, inner circle, greatest of all time, Hall of Famers.
They were all captains, as CJ is also a captain.
Yes. But if you think, like, an extra step past
100%. That. And so for the fans out there that are thinking, oh, you don't think he's a leader? Why is he a captain? Like, dude, if you're a quarterback, you're a captain. Like, it's just, if you're not a captain,
terribly wrong.
Like major red flag if you're a quarterback and not a captain.
Yeah.
I promise. That's the way it works. But there is another level to it. It's the same thing with the tier conversation. Yes, the Texans are a 10-win team in my mind. Yes, they're going to get to the playoffs. But what are they going to do in the playoffs? That's what really matters if you're a playoff team is, are you fighting for the Super Bowl? Are you in that tier? And if CJ Stroud, yes, he's a captain. But is he a true leader as a captain? That's what we've got to see. And you say he's got the tools. And when I hear that, yes, he's got the resume. He's good enough. He's talented enough. He's the captain. He's the quarterback. Like, yes. But he's also, like, he's the good enough. He's respected. He is overly respected in that locker room. There's not a single player in that room that has a negative thing outside of maybe this, if they feel the same way, has anything negative to say about CJ, the way he plays the game, how good he is, and the person that he is.
Because there is the, you know, the branch, you know, the split in the road of 100% great guy, you know, all this stuff. Everyone loves him off the field. He's a Boy Scout. But isn't a leader and actually is off-putting to his teammates to the point where they, at start, roll their eyes and then eventually pretty openly make fun of him in practice and on the field. And that's Russell Wilson with the Seattle Seahawks during the Legion of Boom era. He had all the same things. I have no doubt in my mind that if I met Russell Wilson, I'd come away from that conversation being like, Russell Wilson is a great dude. But he just didn't have that leadership. He didn't have that.
It's just a cornball.
A-plus leadership that we're asking
but
for.
But I think in the moments on the field, we saw there was leadership there when it came to the game of football. I don't think he's, like, getting invited over for the barbecue and hanging out with the boys. Like, he's not.
They definitely had a different group chat without him.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, he's not on, like, the dude's chat. Like, I think CJ's in that chat. I think CJ's one of the boys. He's one of the, like, he's an awesome dude. Again, he's the guy that you would love your daughter to date. But, like, Michael Jordan wasn't loved. Like, his teammates hated his ass.
Yeah. You do need a little bit of the MF-er.
Yeah, you have, like, dude, you got to be a drill sergeant. You got to be a leader. Like, you don't have to be
good cop
disliked.
And bad cop. Good cop and bad cop.
You don't need to be disliked to be a good leader, but you definitely need to ruffle some feathers here and there and grab someone by the face mask and yank them down and be like, bro, that's enough. That's not, like, we're not playing to, like, have a decent drive here or put something on our reel or, you know, put something on our highlight tape.
Oh, okay.
We're putting something together to win a Super Bowl, and those habits are built now in training camp, for one. And then you also have to just do them incessantly throughout the game to stack bricks. I know it's boring to coach speak, but it is what it is. Like, you just got to stack bricks constantly, and it's boring as hell because you've got to stack so many of them. Every single play, every single drive, every single quarter, every single half, every single game. And then if you stack enough of them, at the end, you get to the end of the season. Like, damn, 12 wins? It felt like it was kind of easy. Like, oh, maybe it's because you weren't relying on this crazy stuff to happen. All you did was just the simple stuff constantly, and that allowed you to flourish and allowed you to be great because you weren't second and 25. You weren't first and 15. You were just, like, at the chains, where you needed to be, moved the ball well, held each other accountable, and you have a standard. So often last year, it felt, and I can't really call out individuals on this one, but after wins, it seemed all good. And yeah, wins good, but you know damn well when we talked to D'Amico Ryans on Monday, like, it wasn't all good. A win, there were several weeks where they looked like crap. They just weren't good enough because you knew that if they played a good team in that situation or in the playoffs they played that way, they weren't going to win. Just because you win doesn't mean you're playing well. Just means you did enough that day to escape sometimes with a win. The Texans, no matter what, win or lose, they've got to have that high standard, and they have to do it at a higher rate. And it's got to be done offensively, and it's got to be held by CJ Stroud. So, CJ, I know you're a big listener of the Paul Gallant Show. After all, who's not? You got to be a better leader, holding your men accountable. Not off the field, not as human beings, but as football players. And I think to a lesser extent, Nick Caley will likely help with that. And I strongly believe that with Laremy Tunsil gone, he's no longer the guy that's been in the league for 7 years. When he's been in the league, I think 9 years now. He was there 7 years when CJ got in. He's no longer the de facto leader veteran that sets the tone in that building. Like, CJ walked in that building. That was Laramie's building. That was Laramie's offense. That was all Laremy. And I think I'd be willing to bet that CJ learned some things from Joe last year. Joe Mixon is that guy that just doesn't horse around. It's strictly business when it comes to football. And I think CJ's got it in him. He's got to feel confident enough to even hold someone like Joe Mixon. If you're going to hold, you know, a Juice Scruggs accountable, I'm asking for that, but I'm not asking just for that. I'm asking for more than that. Hold Nico accountable. Not that he needs to be, or Joe, but be willing to, if ever needed, to hold the best guys and the toughest guys and the most alpha guys on your team also accountable. That's got to be CJ Stroud. He doesn't have to be the most vocal guy all the time, but he's got to be more of a leader than he's been. Let me know what you think about that on the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. We're going to take a break here on ESPN 97.5, 97.25, or what, 92.5. you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, X, at Will Kunkel. You can also find me on YouTube, my show that I carried over from when I was with Fox here in Houston, Kicking It with Kunkel. We'll be back on the other side of the break in a minute.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant.
Rumble, stumble, bumble. Welcome back inside the Paul Gallant Show. No, Paul Gallant today. Will Kunkel filling in. You can find me on X, Instagram, TikTok, and my show, Kicking It with Kunkel as well. All right, Mabes, so what are we going to do here? We're 45 days away from what? Like, what's the benchmark here?
We do Eagles Cowboys. We go with the Thursday night, week one season.
Real football.
Regular season football.
Good for
that,
you.
That is the date that we choose. So, yeah, 45 days away. Coming up.
Is that a lot or a little? I don't know how you guys feel. Is that like right around the corner, or are we still like, we start 45 days?
We started as a joke years ago at 100.
Is it a joke in America, in American sports society? Like, is a 100-day countdown a joke?
What happened is we did it as a joke one day, and then our boss at the time listened and said, hey, that's actually a really great idea. Let's do it every day over the summer. And so, yeah.
99, that's 98.
Yes. And so when I do get to 45, at least for me, I'm like, this is pretty close.
Oh, halfway.
Yeah, we got training camp. Most of these days, there's, if we're lucky, OTAs happening. Now we actually got training camp this week. So, yeah, I mean, 45 is not a great NFL number looking at the list.
It's a great pitcher number.
Great pitch. Very good pitcher number. Very good pitcher number. Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, I'm looking at this list. This is a substantial players wearing 45, not yet in the Hall of Fame. So Hall of Famers are Bill Willis, Emlyn Tunnell, Kenny Ellis, and Clark Hinkle. So if that's a...
Yeah.
So...
And then
with all due respect, I've never heard of any of those guys.
Exactly.
So those are the Hall of Famers.
I do like the phrasing, though, of substantial players not yet in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, just out of respect.
And then they have, like, Deion Jones.
I remember Mike Sellers.
Yeah, former Texan for a very short time. Devin White. 45.
Yeah. He was there for like an hour last
year.
Yes.
Not yet in the Hall of Fame.
Not yet. Stand by, though.
Yeah. We need to wait 5 years. But, yeah, no.
Archie Griffin.
That's probably the best one, at least
gotta
name
be.
Recognition-wise. Maybe, I mean, he's not in the NFL or Pro Football Hall of Fame.
No.
But winning back-to-back Heismans, I'm willing to give you
you get a nod here on the Paul Gallant Show for back-to-back Heismans. For sure. I think we're good with
that.
If you're
the only player ever to do something, I'll give it to you.
Golly, there's a lot of, I don't want to say no-namers, but no. Non-known-namers.
Yeah, we need to get to, like, the 30s pretty fast.
Tomorrow's going to be
some running
44. I think I'm back in here on Thursday, I believe. So
yes.
That would be day 42.
Probably another tough one just off the top of my head.
Golly. I got to do some research. Best 42 athletes. I don't know. Good luck on that.
I mean, Jackie Robinson. But...
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, obviously.
Pro, forever. Pro football?
Mariano Rivera, the last baseball player to wear 42. All right.
That is true. Oh, God, Ronnie Lott. Ronnie Lott wore 42.
Elite. You know, so I was
at
the...
let's not spoil Thursday.
Fine, I'll save my Ronnie Lott story for Thursday. How about this? Most important Texan, other than C.J. Stroud. If I pose that question to you, Mapes, who comes to your mind first? Or what players?
It's tough because I want to go with a offensive lineman because, like we said, that to me is the make or break kind of position. But there's no one guy.
No.
You know, like we were talking about with Laremy Tunsil. Like, it is five guys having to work together. So
that's the most important room,
yes,
for me.
But it's not one guy, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
by far the most important room, and yet if we do it this way,
yeah,
I don't think none of us are like Drew Scruggs, damn it. Drew Scruggs
exactly
is the most important player for the Texans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jarrett Patterson.
Am I too fantasy football brain by saying
Jane
Higgins? Of just going with the rookie wide receiver, you need another outside threat because you have Nico Collins. Great, love it. Top 10 receiver in the league, easily. You have Christian Kirk, who's going to operate mostly from the slot. You need another receiver on that outside when you're going three wide. And it's going to be Higgins. Fully guaranteed contract as a second-round pick. Broke the barriers. Kind of broke the rest of the league for a short while with that contract. I think it's Jaden Higgins because he can, again, as one guy goes, can bring an extra element to this offense to where maybe they can be more passing oriented, or at least having a more dangerous passing attack just by the benefit of being another outside receiver not named Nico Collins.
Okay, so I agree but vehemently disagree as well.
I love that.
So I agree it's a wide receiver. I actually do think it's Nico Collins.
Okay.
So I think you're in the right room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you lose Nico.
Just, he needs to be a stud.
Yeah, like, yeah. What do you have if you don't, if I think it's between Nico, and then you can either go, on the defensive side, it's a great problem to have to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
So Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, or Derek Stingley. Those are your best defensive players.
Mm-hmm.
So Derek Stingley is probably your best defensive player. Now, you could say I value the pass rush with Daniil or Will Moore versus the corner, but I think Derek Stingley is probably your best player on this roster in general.
Yeah.
So, man, like, if you – here's why football is the consummate team sport. Because no one player wins it. You can lose and still have – a handful of really great players, and you need everyone else around you to still win. And you can get rid of your right fielder and still win a game. You're not going to obviously do very well throughout the season. But if you don't have a right fielder, you can kind of smoke a mirror and survive a game and win. You're not getting rid of a corner playing a man down. You're not going on a power play or losing somebody offensively and still going to win a game. Like, it's impossible in football to be a man down and actually win a game. So It's between those kind of four. I'm going to say it's Nico Collins because D'Amico Ryans, I think, and this defense is so good as a unit that if you lose Derek Stingley, yeah, you don't have that shutdown. Yes, you don't have the ability to take away the entire side of the field in one player, and that's huge. But I think D'Amico Ryans is good enough to scheme and work around that. And I think he did. Yeah. He proved that last year in the Packers game. I think they were missing five starters in that game and shut the Packers down, which tells you how bad, again, the offense was. So I think there are ways around losing your best player defensively because they have so many good players, and it's led by a guy that knows how to coach defense, knows how to schematically beat other teams. So offensively,
yeah,
I go Nico Collins because my biggest concern is who's catching passes from CJ if he has time. Okay, Nico, got it. Christian's gonna be, I think he's gonna be fine. I don't know how good he's gonna be. I just don't know. But no Tank Dell, no Steph Diggs. If you lose Nico, you're gonna rely on Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll, like rookies. And maybe we turn around like, damn, we now have a three-headed monster. They're Pro Bowlers, both up for Rookie of the Year, whatever it might be, maybe. But I'm not counting on Xavier Hutchinson. I don't know that he's gonna make the roster. I don't know that John Metchie's gonna make the roster.
Yeah.
Tight end Dalton Schultz. I'm good. I'm sure as hell not betting on him.
No, I maybe it's Cade Stover of,
yeah.
Hey, can you beat out?
Well, and I think I posed this question to somebody somewhere. I don't know where it was. Like, who's your tight end one in week one versus week 12? Exactly. Are they different?
I if Dalton Schultz doesn't take a step, isn't better than what he showed by the end of last season, then I hope the answer is different.
He can't be.
I hope it's Cade Stover.
He was too much of a detriment.
Yeah, so that, you know, like you said, he didn't have the classic 2 weeks after the season ends, like, by the way, Dalton Schultz was playing through injuries, getting a surgery on his shoulder. Like, we never heard that. Maybe
you wanted to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. It was a classic of, like, normally I roll my eyes at that. Because it's, you know, kind of excuse making, but
no, but some of the it's like
I would have preferred you being playing hurt.
Yeah,
I want an excuse for that. So yeah, I think you're right that if by week 12, like Cade Stover hasn't,
or even honestly, like I like Brevin Jordan.
Yeah,
Brevin Jordan brings
was an ACL last year. He was out. Yeah,
so I saw him in the locker room last year, a handful of weeks after he got hurt, and that dude bulked up so much his upper body. He was jacked.
Okay, I was going to ask good weight or bad weight.
Great weight.
Okay.
I mean, jacked. And I've seen some videos in this offseason. Brevin Jordan's working his tail off.
Okay.
So if he learns how to block, that dude's not going to be afraid to run dudes over. He's not going to be afraid to move bodies if he can figure out how to do it. Cade Stover's kind of the same way. He's got to learn how to do it. I talked to a coach kind of, you know, on background last year at the Hall of Fame game down on the field. And I said, like, who's one guy I should really kind of keep an eye on today? And who should I really watch? Because, you know, CJ's not playing. Joe's not playing. You know, you don't know what you don't know. Coaches know a lot more than we know. And he said Cade Stover. Love Cade Stover. Love what that guy brings. Unfortunately, didn't really come to fruition too much last year. I think we saw some glimpses and some possibilities. But, again, it's hard to get out of a guy's way. Even though Dalton wasn't good, he's still a proven NFL player over years.
Yeah, and Stover, I believe, is a guy who moved to tight end relatively late in his football career. Yeah. I think it was at Ohio State he moved to tight end. So it is, he's still in the kind of learning a new position area. So I'm willing to, you couldn't beat out Dalton Schultz in year one of being an NFL player.
Mm-hmm.
By year two,
and they also had him and Brevin Jordan doing fullback work, which I thought was the biggest mismanagement of positions that the Texans we've had. I never thought Nick Casario or D'Amico Ryans or Bobby Sloak would ever allow that. I never thought they'd be like, we're good with, we don't need Andrew Beck. Like, and I don't know that Andrew Beck was that valuable, but when you saw what the drop-off was and you saw what the alternate decision was to have tight ends try to fill that role, that's just not the way it works.
Yeah, that's what I do in Madden. You know, that's something that it doesn't work in the real world because they are different positions. And like I said, Cade Stover's still kind of learning how to play tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're throwing him in a different position that seemed like it was pretty DOA.
So the most important position, I don't know if I've swayed you or not, is in the wide receiver room, and my player's Nico Collins.
So the reason I shied away from Nico Collins is because I think that he is a known quantity. I'm kind of penciling him in for, you know, if he's healthy the entire season.
But that's, like, he can't, 1,300 yards. Can't do that. Can't do the if.
That's fair.
The drop off from Nico.
How many? He missed six last year, right?
I think that's right. He missed more than we thought he was going to. Yeah, he played, I think, let me see here. He played 12 games, 12 games last year, 1,000 yards, which 1,000 yards, by the way, is not a lot of yards. It's like 60, it's less than 60 yards a game because then I'll play 17. But if he stays healthy, he's their best player offensively. He's their most important player because the drop off from him afterwards, and we don't know what we're getting from Nick Caley. So if this doesn't work out with Nick and you don't have Nico Collins, then what do you do? Like, do you look to turn? Could you just give the ball to Joe and Nick every play?
Yeah.
What if the offensive line can't block?
Yeah. I was going to say, what happens is that we lose our over 9.5 bet if that happens. Yeah. But the drop-off is big from Nico Collins, is great from Nico Collins. That's why it's like Jaden Higgins, if you can be a valued member of this offense. I think it's more of a rounding out the offense versus the top end stuff. That's kind of where we're disagreeing here, I think, because I agree with you that Nico Collins like needs to be out there, needs to be good. I believe that he will be. Jaden Higgins is the now we're showing some of the promise that was made last offseason with Diggs and Dell and Collins. Oh my God, all these number one wide receivers. If Higgins can be a good number two, that to me would be huge for
the
this.
It takes him to the next level.
Yeah.
You know who he is from Astros world? And I made this leap, if you will, going into the season. He's your Christian McCormick. Why do I say that?
Chaz McCormick?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chaz. He's your Chaz McCormick. Not because Chaz McCormick is a world beater and he's your best outfielder, but because the Astros were coming into the season and we all said, all right, what's the biggest concern on this team? Oh, outfield. Like, yeah. Jose's never done it. We didn't even know if Cam Smith was going to be called up, if he could do it at the big league level. He played double A. That was it. He's never played right field. Holy hell, what he has done as a rookie in right field for the first time in his life.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
So impressive. And Jake Meyers was a massive question mark offensively. It wasn't even a question mark offensively. We knew he wasn't going to be good. Now, he's we knew he's an elite center fielder defensively. And now he's a good hitting center fielder, but now he's hurt. So I said, Chaz McCormick, is he the key to this offense and to this team to take that next jump? Because if you get 70 RBI, 22 home run, Chaz McCormick, like that gets you into a different stratosphere of a team, assuming that the other guys kind of do their job. So that's why I do agree with your point differently. I don't know that Jaden Higgins is their most important player, but he is that, like, is he the X factor to this team?
Maybe. I think that's more of the
assuming, because there's so much assuming that has to go on to allow that to even matter. So, like, Nico Collins has to be healthy. The offensive line has to be good. C.J. Stroud's got to kind of, you know, get back to his confidence and be good enough. And Nick Caley's got to work. Like, Nick Caley's got to be able to be good in order to get Jaden Higgins the ball.
Yeah.
So, if all that happens and then Jaden Higgins hits or Jalen Noel hits, one of them, just one of them, now pair that with Christian Kirk out of the slot, like, oh, now we're cooking a little bit with oil now. Now we went from just don't suck offense to, damn, like, are we a top 10 offense? Because if you can do that, you know Joe Mixon's going to produce. You know that. You know it. Worst offensive line, for argument's sakes, in the NFL last year, and Joe Mixon was a stud. Absolute dog. Yeah. You know you're getting Joe to do his damn thing.
Probably the best 4 yards per carry in league history is Joe Mixon. Yeah.
The hardest earned, the most earned. Most we know impressive. That when Nico Collins is on the field, he is an impact player. He's an elite wide receiver when he's on the field. We know all that. The question is, if you take away Nico Collins, which defenses will do, they're going to say, all right, we're going to take away their best player. That's Nico. Like, we'll let Joe get his 4 yards of carry. We'll let Joe do his thing. It's not going to be a massive big play threat like Nico is. Nico can change games. Then who? I don't know what we're going to – like, Christian Kirk hasn't had a wildly, you know, impressive career. He's gone over 1,000 yards one time. It was in 2022, and it was 1,100 yards. He played 17 games, 1,100 yards. It's not – like, I'm not sitting there saying, like, damn, like, Christian Kirk is going to be the answer to this offense. Somebody else needs to be more than that. He played in 8 games last year, 12 games the year before that. So he has not stayed on the field and stayed healthy either, so you can't rely on him. So to your point, if Jaden Higgins can stay healthy, can learn the offense, can be a productive player, then it takes the Texans to a different level. So
yeah, absolutely agree. We got Chuck on hold.
Chuck, my boy, what's up, Chuck?
What's going on, guys? I just have to agree with y'all on a couple things. I think Nico's important. I think basically offense coordinator you got to hit on. But as far as a quarterback, I'd like CJ to parallel his game after somebody just needs to show him tapes of Peyton Manning. To me, Peyton Manning changed the game as far as the quarterback position. I know Brady's the greatest winner, but Peyton was a dog. Listen to some of them stories about how he told wide receivers not to catch the ball with one hand, got on his offensive lineman. When the sheriff was in town, he was listened to. Y'all have a good day, guys.
Man, Chuck, great call. Because spot on. Like, spot on. He changed the way the game was played from a quarterback position because he would call the plays at the line. He was that involved. He was that aware and that smart. He did all the... Like, everyone's got to have a strong enough arm. Everyone's got to be able to slow the game down to read the defense. Everyone's got to be able to move at least enough to not get killed. You got to. Everyone's got to have all the baseline stuff. It's the other things, the stuff you don't see, the measurables you don't see that we don't talk about enough that are arguably more important. The mental side of the game is so critical, which I wonder if Nick Caley, CJ talked about this in OTAs or minicamp whenever we talked to him. Man, I guess it was minicamp. CJ talked about the fact that he's going to have more power at the line. He's going to take more control. Does that give him the confidence and the power to lead more, to speak more, and hold his guys more? Like, this is my offense now. There was a very weird thing. There's a lot of stories out there between him and Bobby Slowick, the offense and Bobby Slowick. I've heard even more stories between Bobby Slowick and D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick that he just never had it, and like there were issues, and D'Amico didn't know about it because D'Amico's on the other side of the building doing defense stuff. That if this turns into Nick's offense, yes. But if he empowers CJ to run the offense, then you have – it's like a business where it's employee-owned. You take pride in the product. You want to sell more. You want to do better because every product you sell, you get more. It's a good type of – like it's like working on commission as well. You want to sell more because you make more. It's not CJ's offense and he's just a pawn. He's just going out there doing – hey, do what you're told. Do this. That's the play because I said so. It's like – okay, I'm going to do it. I'll do what I'm told. I do what I'm told. It's my second year in the league. I don't know any better. I can't tell my OC off. Like, we're not trying to start all this drama. I'm trying to be amenable and a good leader and a good soldier here. Let's just do my job. You don't really take ownership in it the same way. Now, if he has this ownership mentality and he's able to take charge at the line, then it's his offense. He takes pride in that offense. And now, bad plays are a mirror image of him. Like he's accountable now for all the players, which if that happens, he's going to have to answer for. And now this is where you have the accountability step in and his leadership. So great call by Chuck. I think it's a phenomenal point. I certainly don't expect him to get Peyton Manning levels because Peyton Manning was the sheriff. He was one of the greatest minds to ever play the game. I don't expect him to get there. And I think that's unfair, but certainly closer to that than what we've seen his first 2 years of very submissive, timid, quiet, nice, and polite. Now I need him to go out to do the next level and be like, I don't need friends right now. I need teammates for these four quarters that are willing to die next to me and do everything that it takes. So that's kind of where I said great call by Chuck there, Mapes, huh? Give Chuck a hand.
Yeah.
Very few sports radio phone calls are well thought out and good.
Yeah, and start with, I agree with what you guys have been saying.
Yeah.
That was a nice
change. Hey, I'm just calling in to let you know how smart you are.
What this tells me is that the question was what Texans player, or at least it's implied what Texans player. I think the real answer might be Nick Caley of just who's the most important figure for this Texans team next season. It's just Nick Caley.
It all trickles down from there. At the very least, it all trickles down from there. And I had this discussion last week as well. The best franchises and organizations in all sports, when this goes into the – it was an Astros conversation, the reason they have so much success despite a subpar roster right now is because of the organization and because of the culture. And that's what D'Amico is trying to build. So if Nick Caley on the offensive side of the ball and on the offensive side of the building can also have that culture and build that organization as well, it all trickles down from there and it allows – CJ to be the guy he needs to be. It allows Joe and Nico and all those guys to be put in position to do what they do best, and that's how they're going to get wins if that offense can suck less. Suck way, way, way less.
Yes. That's I think that might be our motto for the Texans offense. Suck less.
Suck so much less.
A lot less.
And so I think it comes – because what happens if Nick Caley doesn't work?
That, I mean
– Gerard interviewed for the job, the quarterback coach, Gerard Johnson, didn't get it. Do you go you go to him? Like, where do you turn? And when do you pull that plug? Because now we're getting into the discussion of this impacts D'Amico.
Yeah.
And I said this when I was with Fox. I did a breakdown of D'Amico knows how to run a defense. D'Amico knows how to build a defense. D'Amico knows how to call a defense, adapt with a defense. D'Amico is an elite defensive coordinator. Is he a great head coach? We kind of saw, yes. But also, with that is a CEO. You have to be a great CEO to be a great head coach. And those decisions are made in the offseason, off the field, sometimes during the season. Is he willing to do what needed to be done, get rid of Bobby Sloak, or at least have a contingency plan that if it didn't work out and you kept Bobby Sloak, you had an alternative plan to go to midseason? He made his call. He got rid of Bobby. He hired Nick Caley. He's never called plays. Not saying that's not the right move, but we don't know what's going to happen. What happens if this doesn't work?
Yeah, it turns into, can D'Amico Ryans hire offensive coordinator? Like, does he know what he's looking for? I remember last season, it was he's loyal to a fault with these guys where he got up there and nothing was wrong. And nothing was wrong with anything in the offense.
I'll always push back against that because he said that and it was like eye rolling and we all knew it was baloney. But I knew, knowing D'Amico, that's not what it was like behind the closed doors.
Okay.
Like, there's just no way. Now, I have learned that he never knew how truly bad Bobby was and how bad things were on the offensive side of the building. And that in the off season he learned,
like,
and he
was like,
"Say that again."
Like the interpersonal stuff with the
to a degree, but just like how bad schematically the adjustments, lack thereof. Like, he just didn't know because he's not involved in it. He's on the, you know, you either have an offensive head coach that's kind of involved in the defense or the offense, or I guess you just kind of walk around and do everything, which is more college.
Nick Sirianni stuff.
Right.
And that's walk around, do nothing.
Man, he said about the Super Bowl winning head coach. But he kind of found out and got real pissed off this offseason, I heard, that it never got back to him that it was as bad as it was.
And as we talk about C.J. Stroud learning and maturing as a quarterback and as a leader, D'Amico Ryans learning on the job
of
what it means to be a head coach. That's why, you know, hiring head coach is so hard, is that, okay, this guy's a great coordinator. Sweet. We got that. We're going to have some good defenses when we hire D'Amico Ryans. Can he manage the locker room? Is he a guy that is a leader to all 53 guys on the team? That's another hurdle that a lot of coordinators that become head coaches have to clear. D'Amico Ryans, I think, cleared that pretty well. I think we can say that everyone on the team respects and likes D'Amico Ryans. And then the next part is, like you said, how you phrased it, the CEO stuff, the how good are you at delegating,
the
at
business
hiring,
decisions,
that stuff. And that is, you know, Nick Caley is going to shine light on how good D'Amico Ryans is at that aspect of being a head coach, because I think the other stuff he's shown that he's good at.
Yeah, he is the right guy to change. He clearly was.
Culture,
he's already proven
all that stuff.
100%. He changed the culture, and that helped with Will Anderson and Nick Caserio and C.J. Stroud as well, to be fair. And by all accounts, everything I hear away from the public conversations as well is that he and Nick do work really well together. And I think kudos to Nick, because I think the right organizations is that the GM probably has final say and is above the head coach in those decisions. But at the same time, you really truly need to work arm in arm. Like, you really have to be lockstep in what you're going to do and how you're going to go about it. And for D'Amico, it's going to be very interesting to see. I hope to God that we don't get there to figure out what he's going to do if Nick Caley doesn't work. But everyone's got to learn on the job at some point. D'Amico learned on the job. Bill Belichick learned on the job. Bill Parcells learned on. Everybody is a first-time head coach at some point. Some people get put in better situations to where you can learn on the job, and it's not as obvious and clear that every decision is critical, crucial, and flawed. Like, D'Amico makes a lot of wrong decisions, not because he's not good, but because you make so many decisions, you're not going to hit on every one of them. When I actually had Clint Hurdle on Kicking It with Kunkel, which you can find on YouTube, and he said that when he was a manager for the Rockies, when they were really, like, by the way, what Clint Hurdle did as a manager, he got the Rockies and the Pirates to the playoffs and, like, really good, is insane. But he said he and an intern went from 3 hours before first pitch. He had an intern follow him around and click like a pitch count, one of those pitch count clickers, every time he made a decision. Any decision, whatever it was. And about I think it was like 45 minutes prior to first pitch, he kind of goes off and does, like, has some alone time and just kind of gathers his thoughts like he does every game. And the intern said he made 185 decisions.
Whew.
Just before before a regular season game for 3 hours. 185. He was like, "Will, there's no way I got them all right." Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way. Whatever the decision, the conundrum was or the answer I gave, I didn't get 100% of them right.
Yeah.
Like, what do you hope for? 60, 70, 85, 90%?
Yeah. I mean, if you're at 90%, you're making 200. You're getting 20 wrong.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah, that's nuts.
And then in football or in the game decisions, you have to make a decision split second. And then not only that, you have to rely on someone else to execute it. Like, you can call the right play. You can tell them exactly what to do. And if it's not executed, well, it's like, what the hell was that defense? Like, what are we doing? Is that what their coach should do?
Yeah.
No. Not only is that not what their coach should do, they were told to do not that. They still did that, and it still didn't work.
Yeah, and it's on me.
Yeah, and it's my bad though.
Yeah, yeah, and even more so with a guy like D'Amico Ryans, where he's making the decision to trust Bobby Slowick, and now you're on the hook for the Bobby Slowick decisions that 100%. People agree and disagree with.
And so, that's extreme ownership.
Yeah.
That you take blame for everything. If you explained everything perfectly, you explained it 5 times, you say to yourself, I should have done it a 6th time. I didn't explain it perfectly. I had to explain it different because clearly something didn't get through. And that's, again, going back to the Laramie Tunsil concept. You have to stay and answer questions and talk to the media, because if you don't, you're not a leader. You're not accepting any sort of ownership for that offensive line. You're not taking any of it. You're letting your dudes take shrapnel in the trenches throughout the entire freaking season. And then some of them think that they don't have to talk to the media because you don't. And we have a very friendly media group here in Houston that we don't go to the PF, the Pro Football Writers Association, say, dude, I requested player X. They have to talk because they're obligated to talk. They will be fined if they don't talk and you make a complaint about it. And there have been guys in the past that were very good at leading that and making sure that happened. But for Laramie, you know, he would talk, but off camera, and he would do those type of, but dude, that's just not the way. It's not good enough. It doesn't work that way. And you've got to take the fall as the best lineman, as the alleged leader of the offensive lineman room. And he never did that. All right. We're going to talk. What are we going to do on the other side of the break, Mabes? You got any ideas, any thoughts? What do you want to get to?
It's been a while since we talked about the Astros. Do you want to get sad again?
Yeah, let's do Astros. What are the expectations? Are we changing our expectations due to the continued injured list growing and growing and growing? Or are we still saying, no, dude, like, they need to be in the playoffs. They have to win this division. It's not even a good division. So to not win it, it's Joe Espada's fault. It's Dana Brown's fault. What do they do in 10 days of the trade deadline? We're going to talk about that on the other side here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. And please call, text in to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I'm Will Kunkel filling in for Paul Gallant today.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.